Good evening and welcome to What's Happening in Helena, a weekly roundup of events at the Montana Legislature, and we'll talk a little bit about the coming week. I'm Jackie Yamanaka in Helena. My colleague Jim Gransbury of the Billings Gazette is at our main studio in Billings. Good evening, Jim.
Jackie, how are you this evening?
Oh, just fine. I want to say there were two main highlights this week, the inauguration and second, how the evenly divided Montana House struggled to elect its leadership and get organized. And so these will be our topics this evening with our three guests, Governor Brian Schweitzer, House Democratic Leader Dave Wandenried, and finally Speaker of the House, the last time there was a tied chamber, John Vincent of Bozeman. As always, we've reserved the last segment of our program for your comments and questions. We'd like to welcome our first guest this evening, who's joining us via telephone, Governor Brian Schweitzer.
Well, good evening.
Good evening and welcome. Jim, go ahead with the...
Governor, we were speaking earlier today about how things have gotten so busy in the last 3 days, and since we last talked, I find that you've found the time or the necessity of appointing three members to the Montana Fish and Game Commission, and they held an impromptu meeting, if you will, on a conference call and decided to hold off on issuing hunting licenses for bison in Yolson Park. So maybe you'd like to tell us what you did today and be too peripatetic about it.
Well, I'll just tell you, it was mid-December. The commission decided that they ought to conduct a hunt and chose a number of 10 bison. Now, there's well over 4,000 bison now in the park, and I think that the carrying capacity is, by many people's estimation, at least 1,000 less than that. By the Department of Livestock's estimations, about 50% are carrying brucellosis, which is a threat to the domestic livestock industry. We need to find a resolution to decrease the number of bison that are in the park, so that they're leaving the park, and B, a resolution to the possible conflict of transmission of brucellosis from the bison herd to domestic livestock, or at least the perceived threat as viewed by animal health officials. So when this notion came up that we would have a hunt, and I want everyone listening to raise two fingers on each side and wave them, because this is actually not a hunt. The way this works is like sighting in your rifle on a refrigerator with horns. These are slow animals that aren't scared of anybody, and you would just pick one out and shoot it. Now, we did that about 10 years ago, and there was such an outcry, bad publicity for the state of Montana. There were television cameras there viewing it, and people taking pictures, and it became such a hot potato that we effectively were stopped from good management practices, all-encompassing management practices, for the last 15 years. And so my concern is that we step out for 10 bison and create a firestorm that would set us back another dozen years from some good, effective management of controlling the population. So I called yesterday morning. I said, look, we're running out of time. So I called in the following. I called in our state veterinarian. I called in the director of the Department of Livestock. I called in the director of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And I called in a representative from the Montana Stock Growers Association, individually. I sat down with him and I said, okay, explain to me what it is that we're doing and why we're doing it and how you believe this is to be effective. And I didn't find any one of the four that thought that this was going to resolve the brucellosis issue, resolve the population issue, and all of them expressed some level of concern, some more than others, that this would derail the process of population control that's probably required. Now, a hunt is a free chase hunt. When they leave the park, I'd like to be able to have sportsmen and women go out in a free chase hunt and hunt these animals. This hasn't been offered. So the commission that existed in December, they voted 4-1 to conduct this hunt. Well, based on these specialists that I spoke to today, people that are involved in the livestock industry, involved in fish, wildlife, and parks, and I didn't formally call people in the tourism industry, but I've had a number of people contact me that concerns that that this could create a mark that would decrease the number of visitors to Montana. These are two of our largest industries in Montana, the livestock industry and the tourist industry. And it didn't seem to be helping either one. In fact, it would hurt both. So I had received many, many applications for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission. It's appointments that I needed to make. I need to make three of them. So I contacted some people. I selected the commission this morning. They held their first meeting by conference call this afternoon. And they decided to postpone the hunt. I suspect they, like me, believe that a hunt, a free chase hunt, is appropriate, and it'll come later, just not now.
I think they voted to reconsider whether to continue. They'll be meeting on Monday to actually decide what to do, whether to actually postpone the hunt or carry it out as scheduled. Governor, I want to ask you about, if I could, about some of your priorities during your administration. Hunting and fishing certainly is high up there, along with schools and health care, for example. Yesterday, when you met with your cabinet, you did mention access.
I absolutely did, and I think if you recall, I turned to Jeff Hagner and I reminded everybody around the room that while people in Montana are concerned about economic development, people are passionate about education, K through 12, and higher education. People universally believe that we have to improve access to affordable health care, and many more issues across Montana that people are, you know, concerned about. In my mind, the issue that people become the most passionate about is hunting and fishing issues and the ability to access our 30 million acres of public land, some of the most magnificent lands on this planet, and the ability to expect that you can be successful when you go hunting and fishing or bagging something.
I'm wondering if your comments about the bison hunt, though, might make those sportsmen wonder about your commitment to hunting.
Oh, wonder. I think the sportsmen and women out there absolutely agree with me. We believe in hunting. Target practicing is where you go out either in a range or a gravel pit or someplace and you put an immobile object up and you shoot at it. Well, these bison that we're talking about are practically the same as a refrigerator. It's not a free chase hunt. I'm committed to having a hunt that would be a significant number of bison, not 10. Not 10 every 15 years. Not 10 bison shot 15 years ago and then shut down for 15 years and try it again. I'm committed to a free chase hunt with a significant number of bison that are harvested every year to decrease the population and begin a legitimate management system of the bison that are leaving the park and work towards a healthier bison herd.
How are you going to approach the Park Service to do that? Because historically, the Park Service has said, you know, the bison are inside the park boundaries. There are bison, but once they cross the border into Montana, we're no longer responsible for any of it.
Well, Department of Livestock and APHIS, part of USDA, Department of Interior, Park Service, you know, this has been an interagency discussion that's been ongoing, and there's been many ideas up to and including the possibility of a new vaccine. I think it's the 51 that seems to be more effective in bison. And whether that is effective or whether a larger winter range so that they don't just cross the line and get shot, so that they have some wider range to move on, and we separate by distance domestic cattle and bison that are roaming out of the park. Those are all solutions that will be in the mix, and we fully expect that the park will be a good neighbor to the state of Montana and vice versa.
So if there's a significant harvest, are you worried then about the tourism aspect that you just mentioned?
Oh, not at all. I think that the tourism aspect, it isn't that Montanans like to hunt and fish like many of you listening and like myself. It isn't that we like to shoot large game and eat the meat. That's not the problem. 10 million people that visit Montana, I suspect most of them know that we hunt in Montana and that we enjoy hunting. We enjoy owning guns and using them. But those tourists, like many of the sports people in Montana, recognize the difference between a hunt and shooting an animal that's standing and chewing their cud 25 feet from where you're standing.
Well, maybe we could have a different kind of hunt and require that the hunters do so via horseback without benefit of saddle and using bow and arrow or a lance.
That was reasonably successful over the last 10 or 12,000 years. It might be a tradition that we that would be worth reviewing.
It would be more sporting. Especially for the buffalo.
Well, I for one would like to view that event.
Yes. Lots of people would like to take pictures of that, I'm sure.
So understand this. I support hunting bison. I support a free chase of hunting bison. I support hunting significantly more than 10. And I support hunting them every year, harvesting every year. I also support improving the health condition of the bison and making sure that we have spatial separation between the cattle and the bison. All of those things are principles that I, as a, not only as an agricultural scientist, but myself as governor, I'm committed to that. And I'm going to work towards bringing the various factions together so we can accomplish that end. That's what the stock growers of Montana would like to see. That's what the sportsmen and women of Montana would like to see. And I know that this is a solution that is going to be beneficial for the state of Montana, for the Park Service, and ultimately for the bison herd.
We have just a couple minutes remaining, Governor, in this segment. I want to ask you to sort of talk about briefly what your legislative priorities are. Just sort of outline them in bullet form.
Very quick. As you know, two-thirds of you voted for a tobacco tax. And when you voted for that tax, you were very clear what you would like that tax to be used for. We are committed to use that tax for the purposes that were laid out by the people. Number one, education, so fewer of our teenagers begin using tobacco. Number two, fully fund the child health insurance program so that low-income children below the age of 18 will have health insurance. And that is almost a 5-to-1 match from the federal government. So it's very good leveraging of our funds. Also, we believe that small businesses, the backbone of Montana's economy, we would like to help them with targeted tax credits so that more of them can afford to buy health insurance for themselves, their families, their employees, and their families. And we think that seniors and others that have expensive prescription drug needs, we think that we can help them not only in buying them, but also helping them in pooling them and eventually importing medicine so that we can have cost containment in purchasing the medicine. That's the healthcare piece. Education. We are putting significant number of dollars, almost 1,000 scholarships for people to attend two-year institutions and four-year institutions in Montana so that every family in Montana can obtain that dream of having people in their family be able to afford a college education. We believe that that will significantly increase the number of people that are trained for the kinds of jobs that we're creating in Montana with information technology, knowledge-based technology, value-added in agriculture and the energy business, and in particular the medical technology and life sciences. So we're making significant numbers of scholarships, first for what we call the best and brightest. These are merit-based scholarships. And secondly, significant numbers of scholarships for needs-based people so that young people in Montana can afford to obtain a college education and be trained in Montana for the jobs of the future. We also believe that as we approach the economic development of Montana, we think we would like to produce a trust within the trust. Effectively, some of the coal trust set aside, not spend the principal, but spend the annual revenue in attracting business to Montana so that we can help small businesses expand, new businesses start, and recruit businesses to come to Montana. So it's significant about economic development. We are serious about having a long-range plan in energy, not just ethanol, not just wind, not just clean coal technology and gas, but all the transmission that comes with it, pipelines, coal by train, electrical transmission. And that's why we're committed this summer to put together a energy summit and bring the best minds from around the world. And we've had people, many people, already suggest that they would like to be involved in it. so that we can put together a one-year, a five-year, and a 50-year plan for energy independence in Montana. We have all the pieces in Montana of being one of the most significant energy centers in the world, but we need a vision, so we're bringing people together. Some of the things that we're working on, and more significantly, we're working with the legislature. I have a great deal of respect for the body and the individuals in the body, and I think that given the opportunity of pulling together, we're going to do some good things in this legislative session.
Want to thank you very much for joining us this evening, Governor, and should mention that your State of the State address is scheduled for January 19th, and you'll have an opportunity to communicate with Montanans more about your priorities.
Well, I fully expect that Jackie Yamanaka will write the first half of the speech, and Jim Grant will take up the last half of the speech.
You don't need any help, Governor.
So stay tuned.
Good night, though. Good night, Brian.
Thank you very much, and all the best to the listeners.
All right, and we will be carrying that State of the State address alive, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
And welcome back to What's Happening in Helena. I'm Jackie Yamanaka in Helena. Jim Gransbury is in Billings. Missoula Representative Dave Wansenried was selected by the Democratic Caucus to be the next Speaker of the House. However, he ran into a contested race when the matter came to the House floor for a vote, and it was contested by a member of his own party. And so with the help of all 50 Republicans and 3 Democrats, Gary Matthews of Miles City was elected Speaker. Wansenried was ultimately elected House Democratic Leader. And we want to welcome Dave Wansenried to our program this evening. And maybe you can talk a little bit about this seemingly new position. I think there might be folks out there who are not familiar what happens when the House is tied and what exactly is House Democratic Leader.
Well, first, Jackie, thank you for the opportunity to be here.
And thank you for coming in, Dave.
Jim, I look forward to talking to you as well.
You bet.
I will explain it this way. Normally, when you have a House that's one party controls, you have a majority leader and a minority leader that serve below the Speaker. In this case, because there's a tie, you basically create positions that share equal amounts of power, not minority, not majority, but generically Republican leader and Democratic leader, and that's what my position is. And I'm proud of the fact that I received the endorsement of my caucus.
I think maybe it'd be useful, Dave, if you could explain to our listeners the rules that will govern how the House is operated, and I want you to specifically address the so-called 12 silver bullets that each side
sure.
gets to use.
Be happy to. Under a tie in the House, the power for conducting the day-to-day business of the House has been assigned by mutual agreement to my position, the Democratic leader, and that of my counterpart, Roy Brown, who's a Republican leader. The committee work is where most of the work is really done in the legislature, and there's a prospect that on some votes there would be a tie vote whether or not a bill was to pass to the House floor or be kept in committee. And instead of having it black and white, no bill goes or all bills go, a decision was arrived at to allow each of the caucuses, in that case the Republican leader and the Democrat leader, to use what we generally refer to as silver bullets, so that throughout the session the Republicans would have the opportunity to bring 12 of its bills out of the committee where there was a tie vote, and similarly the Democrats would have the same opportunity with 12 of its own bills coming out. That would not, of course, ensure anything more than that there would be a floor debate. The thought was that we didn't want to tie up the House on a whole series of bills that tied in committee, but at the same time allow some bills that were more important to each caucus to come forward.
I'm wondering, being House Democratic Leader and Roy Brown of Billings is your counterpart as House Republican Leader, I mean, is your charge really to sort of keep the caucus together? you know, help the listeners out here. And are you worried that maybe there is a split within the Democratic Party, and how do you keep that unity? Since you are, I mean, every vote really does count.
Certainly, and it counts in every session. I think this time the margin of error is just much, much smaller than it's been in the past. My principal responsibility is to articulate our position. We've put together a series of bills, for example, to address many of the things that the governor was talking about earlier, having to do with economic growth, the trust within the trust, investing in job training and retraining. Those are places where we actually have bills that are being drafted and it will be introduced. It will be my charge to articulate how we will take those ideas that the governor and we talked about during our campaigns and put them into policies that have to be approved by the legislature. The position below mine and that of Roy Brown's is that of a floor leader. The floor leader's responsibility will be to see to it that we have articulated it not only to the public but also to one another, and that we're in general agreement about the direction we're going to take, and to develop strategies, I guess you'd say, to present our arguments on the House floor. The whips, there's two positions below the leader, the floor leader, that we call whips, and their charge is to deal more specifically with each member of our caucus. The Democratic caucus is different than the Republican caucus in that we typically allow our members to have more leeway in terms of how they vote. I think we would have been hard-pressed if the situation had been reversed on Monday to produce 50 Democratic votes, as the Republicans did, for example. So in this case, there's a margin of error that's much greater, and the tolerances are much finer. But diversity, I think, is what makes this legislature what it's all about. And as I said on Monday, when we talk about 50-50, 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats, my perspective is that we really have 100 Montanans, and that we've searched for ways to find the common ground, find out how we can listen to those people that send us here, and agree that we can agree 80% of the time, and move those items forward, and then focus on the 20% that's left. Instead of looking at the glass being half empty, I'd like to look at it being half full, and not be bound by divisions that happen to put us at 50-50.
I got the feeling, however, that the Republican caucus has decided that the only way that they're going to have any power is to have 50 no votes ready at the waiting at every turn on the House floor. That tells me that very little is going to get out of the House, and whatever gets done by the legislature will be developed by the Democrats in the Senate, where they have a clear-cut majority.
Well, at first, I hope that that's not the case. I think those might have been intemperate remarks made by a small number of Republicans in their caucus in maybe a moment of frustration. I would hope that we all recognize that the public sends us over here to conduct its business, that our bosses are people that own small businesses, property owners, people in Indian country, people with disabilities, many people that are workers out there in the woods that want us to come over here and do the people's business, and not to create stalemates and not to create gridlock, but to simply say, we're sent here. What are the things that we find out when we listen to people? Get going with the economy. Get some policies that are going to create real jobs with benefits. Take care of the education funding issues that we need to take care of, including the court decision. And not just talk about how expensive health care insurance is, but to try to figure out solutions for that so that small businesses can anchor their employees to the businesses and keep them there. If we do those kinds of things, if we really focus on the matters at hand, I think once we actually get to business over here, those kinds of words that were in the paper hopefully will go away, and we're going to really find the common ground that we need to have to really address the issues that our boss has sent us here to do. This is serious business. We've got many, many people out there, especially in Indian country, and especially some seniors and those with disabilities, that we're going to have to make some important decisions about. And that's going to have to be coupled with the recognition that federal funds for many of these programs that we're relying on now so heavily are going to be cut. If you take the president's word that domestic spending is going to have to be reined in, we won't like that, but we have to make our decisions on the basis of the kind of federal assistance that are going to be available to Montana.
I'm just wondering, you know, with the House being divided 50-50, I can't, I mean, in my mind, I really can't believe that Montanans intended that to happen. I think, you know, when they ultimately went into the polling booth on November 2nd, they voted for the person they felt would represent their needs, and it just happened to turn out this way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering in some ways if the discussion over the squabbling over who's going to be a leader in the leadership, who's going to throw up roadblocks, who, you know, all this stuff is really, as you've termed it, not some others, inside baseball, so to speak. And, you know, Montana really just wants something to happen.
Exactly.
And you know, can you get along?
Well, of course we have to get along. It's not something that any one of us would have necessarily designed, but the fact of the matter is, I think that the fact that it's so close is an indication that reapportionment actually did work, that it was up to each party to go out and convince the voters who had the better proposals and the better ideas and the better candidates. We have to get along. There's too much at stake here. We've got way too many priorities that are weighed our action. Can we solve them all? Probably not. The most precious commodity we have is time. And the sooner we get down to doing the people's business, our boss's work, the better. They want us over here. They're paying us to be here. Once we get through this, and we're really through all this wrangling, I think the public feels like the only thing that we need to do is to listen to them and do what needs to be done to move the state forward.
Who is going to be doing the actual scheduling and making sure that certain bills are going to happen? Is that still going to be the speaker, or do you think that you and your counterpart, Roy Brown, will be doing a lot of some of that?
Well, the speaker traditionally assigns bills to committees, and then once they come back, decides when they'll be scheduled for debate. Those ground rules have been changed in terms of referring bills to committee, but the scheduling on the debate stage of bills will still be handled by the speaker, and both parties will have an equal opportunity to make its case that it wants certain bills heard at certain times, because strategically you want to schedule a bill when the prospects of passing it or defeating it are best for your point of view.
Correct. And I'm just wondering about that political strategy. Both you and Roy have that background,
right?
Frankly.
Right. We're both, in our own ways, experienced in the ways of the institution up there. I'm going to make my pitch, and I'm certain that that Roy Brown, on behalf of his caucus, will be doing the same thing. But in the end, the most important thing is that we remember that it's not about us in the building. It's about everybody else outside the building, the people that pay us to be here, the people that depend upon us to make good decisions. And I'm talking about people that pay property taxes, people that pay income taxes, people that own businesses, people that own shops, people that I work with, truck drivers. Every day of the week, they want to know, what have you done about managing and taking care of programs that have to do with fish and game, for example, and access for sportsmen activities throughout Montana with public lands. They want to know what we're going to do, and we have an obligation and a responsibility to be responsive to those needs.
Jim, I didn't know if you had anything further.
I do not.
Okay.
So I've got a free mic here for 10 minutes, right?
No, I don't think so.
Not quite. Our third guest is here.
Okay.
So with that, I'd like to thank you, Dave Wansenreed, very much for coming over to our little temporary studios here in Helena and giving some perspective as we're starting out this 2005 Montana legislature.
Pleased to be here. Thanks again, and best wishes to the listener.
And we hope to see you again as a guest in the future.
Just say the word. Thanks again.
Thank you, Dave. And we'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jackie Yamanaka in Helena. Jim Gransberry is in Billings, and you're listening to What's Happening in Helena. It's a weekly roundup of events at the Montana Legislature, and we also talk a little bit about what's coming up. In 1985, it was the only other time that the Montana House was tied between 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats. And the speaker at that time was John Vincent of Bozeman. Now, John has a long and distinguished public service career. Currently, he's Gallatin County Commissioner, and in 2004, he was a Democratic candidate for governor. And John was on the House floor during the fractious debate when that was going on to elect the speaker. He also sat in on some of those fiery rules committee hearings where that was going on. And he's here to provide a little bit of insight and perhaps has a little bit of advice for members of the House as they're getting started being tied 50-50. Welcome, John Vincent.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Hello, Jim. How are you tonight?
Good evening, John.
Nice to be with you.
Thank you.
I want to ask you first, John, were you surprised that right off the bat, when the Secretary of State called for nominations for Speaker of the House, that was a matter, that became such a contentious matter?
Well, I knew it was coming. If you're around a while, you get tipped off one way or the other. It was interesting how it unfolded on the floor, but the bottom line was, apparent right up front, and that was that the Republicans were going to elect the Democratic Speaker. And that's just the way that it was planned, it was choreographed, and that's exactly the way it worked out.
What was different in 2005 than in 1985?
Well, lots of things. I don't think that any Democrat or any Republican in 1985 gave any thought whatsoever to kind of a political resolution of how the House was going to operate. The Speaker was going to be a Democrat. We created a new position for the Republican leadership. When we negotiated that settlement in 1985, three Democrats and three Republicans. You had at that table 75 years of legislative experience. You also had every member of that small group having had experience both the majority and the minority. So there was an understanding that what goes around comes around. And I'm not quite sure that that has sunk in with certain individuals and one political party I could name this time around.
It won't, because this, I think, we're seeing one of the unintended effects of term limits. There's no institutional memory there.
Well, and no one has to be held accountable necessarily for a long period of time. You know, you've got a certain number of years you can serve, and then you're automatically booted out.
Right, and I know that this is how far that traditional aspect goes, and there's a great irony here that, in my opinion, conservatives are supposed to honor tradition. In this particular case, conservatives, created a new precedent that I think is very dangerous down the line and creates lots of different and interesting situations that will not, benefit the Montana public or the institutions of either the House or the Senate. But going back a little bit to show you how things have changed and how the sense of institution has changed and the idea of tradition, in 1977, the Senate was tied. And Senator Paul Boyland of Bozeman threatened, if you will, to bolt the Democratic Party and give the Republicans the majority. Matt Hemsel simply told Senator Boyland, if you do, then I, as a Republican, will switch to be a Democrat and will remain tied. That's how strong that respect for the institution was back then, and I think we carried that forward in the House in 1985, and we worked through, and we created an agreement, by the way, in 1985 that was so good that any number of states have called me since then asking how we did it and how it worked, and it really did provide the foundation for the agreement that the House is working under today.
Do you think that what we're talking about really matters to the Montana citizen, or is this really just something that State House reporters and those who watch the process and are involved in the process care about?
Right, I agree exactly with what Democratic leader Wansenried said. I think he's right on that. No, Montanans really don't matter. I'm not sure that most Montanans even know that this kind of activity has gone on, other than it looks kind of messy.
Both, oh, there they go again.
But there they go again, that kind of thing. And I think that's a little bit of a misrepresentation, because I think both sides at this point, I know the Democrats are, and I'm very, very proud of the way they've handled this situation, especially given, you know, the hit they took. When you're a Democrat and you, as part of that Democratic caucus, elect your leader for speaker, and then the Republicans elect another member of your caucus instead, that's a hard hit. That's about as hard as it comes. But they've responded in a very resilient fashion, and I think handled it very, very well. But back to the main question, no, I don't think Montanans, you know, are care at all, other than it appears to be a mess. I think that, you know, reporters, those of us that follow politics closely, the members of the House and the Senate, you know, it's a primary topic right now. But among Montanans, I think Dave is absolutely right. They're looking for solutions. They're looking for a House and a Senate that works. They're working for a government. And I think people always look to government to do a good job for them. They aren't very much interested in politics at all, really. They're interested in good government. And that's what we have to wait and see on, whether the leaders in the House and the Senate, in working with the governor, can produce good government for the state. And that's not easy to do. And they're going to be tested, because there are lots of ramifications of what happened the other day. And it's just going to be a real test of those individuals, especially in leadership positions, to pull this off.
Which leads me to the question of party caucus discipline. Those who go against the caucus, are they looking at somewhere down the road later in the session where their particular pet bills are going to get deep-sixed by those on their own party for the fact that they made an agreement with the Republicans to elect Gary Matthews as the speaker rather than Dave Wansenried?
I really don't think so. I mean, there are lots of factors that go into why a legislator votes for or against any particular piece of legislation. We could talk about that all night, but you know, every legislator is responsible to their own conscience. They're responsible to the constituents that elected them, and they have to pay close attention to that. I'm sure there will be some votes cast in favor of legislation sponsored by these folks, and a little bit of grinding of the teeth when that favorable vote is cast. But especially on the Democratic side, although this will have some ramifications and there'll be some hard feelings for quite some time, I think that most Democrats, you know, accustomed to the big tent, will find a way to vote for those things that they think are in the best interests of Montanans and against those things that they feel otherwise.
Speaking as a former speaker, presiding over a split tied House, and also as a government teacher, could you go through the pros and cons of having a divided House like this?
Well, I think that you could in a textbook sense, but I think that the only true answer to that question is to wait and see how this particular House of Representatives functions.
So it's the personalities of the individuals involved.
Yes, it is.
That's the unknown?
Right. It's a test of the system, and I think we just have to wait and see. I think the promise is there. I think the potential is there for it to work well. I think the potential is there for some real problems as well, depending on the dynamics and the chemistry and the diplomacy that the leadership brings to some crucial questions that will arise because of the 50-50 split. So really, I think it could go either way. We all hope that it goes the right way, and that both parties find a way to work together, and legislation is considered fair and square on the basis of its merits, and everything works out well. But I think we'd be kidding ourselves if we just assume that it is in the cards, that it's automatic. It's going to take some hard work by some dedicated leadership to make it work. We did that in 85, and I'm hoping that the folks on board now can do it this time around.
I'm thinking of 85 and the Stream Access Bill got through that body.
Absolutely.
And that was contentious.
I was asked the other day whether or not I could remember a single bill dying in committee or on the floor of the House on a straight line party vote, 50-50, and I could not remember one. I remember a couple of procedural questions that in the end, or procedural motions that in the end didn't have an effect on a piece of legislation. They might have been used in that hope, but I remember a couple of 50-50 votes on procedural questions, but not on a substantive matter such as a bill.
Any advice?
Work hard. Compromise particulars, but not principle. Work together. Try to work out differences. Try to set the divisions aside. Put them in your memory bank for later if you need to. I mean, this is politics. Let's not kid ourselves. There's government, there's politics, and there's a lot of politics wrapped up in this. But let's save that for another day. Try to get through this legislative session. Carefully consider the governor's agenda and those bills put forward by all legislators, and try to do the best possible job we can. And then once that's over, hopefully the school funding issue is resolved, either in this session or in a subsequent special session, then if you want to politicize it, go ahead and do that and run your best candidates in the races, and maybe we won't be tied 50-50 next time. The thing I'm worried about mostly is that if this sets a precedent, and along with term limits, moves us into an era of backdoor deals. I mean, there's no secret that deals were cut to bring this vote about. Promises were made, chairmanships were promised, seats on committees were promised. That's back room, out of the public view. What's to say that wouldn't happen at 52-48 or 51-49? Once you do it the first time, once you open the door to essentially rejecting a party's caucus's choice, then it's possible that will in itself become regular operating procedure on down the line. I hope it doesn't. I
you
hope
think
that there's
that'll
a
translate
return to
into legislation? I mean, whether it's energy bills.
Once again, I hope not, and I don't think so. I don't think so. It's hard to say. And once again, the test is how it actually works, and we're just going to have to wait and see. I look back at 85, and I give us a real high grade simply because folks on both sides bit the bullet and did what they had to do. I hope that happens this time. But once again, we're just going to have to wait and see. I hope, as Dave Wansenried said, that some of the remarks coming from some Republicans, that it's us against them, the only power we have is 50 votes, we're going to make sure that our presence is heard, and the suggestion is that we will block everything that we want to block if we're, tight at 50. I hope that isn't the case, and I really don't think that it will be. I think that other factors, other variables will come to rest on and with individual legislators, and we'll have close votes, but not necessarily a long string of 50-50 partisan votes on major bills.
Does this give the Senate more power in dictating what comes out of the legislature in the final form?
Well, I think that it does. I'm still giving a little bit of thought to the situation when we have conference committees and free conference committees.
Mm-hmm.
That all depends. And I just, we used to have quite a selection in that regard. I mean, you can't always assume that, two Democrats on a conference committee and one Republican, that the two Democrats will be united and the one Republican will stay over on their camp. I've had conference committees where one Republican and one Democrat have agreed and carried the day. I have free conference committees in that vein as well.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends. And, of course, when I was Speaker, I appointed the free conference committees. In this particular arrangement, that was with consultation with the Republican leader, but the Speaker still had final authority to appoint those, and quite frankly, I appointed the folks that, one, I thought were best qualified, and two, that I thought would bring about the best result on the particular piece of legislation. So we're going to have to see, but obviously the Senate is going to be in a very strong position, and in a position I think that will hold sway on any number of different occasions.
One final question. Anyone, and this is putting you on the spot, but anyone in particular that when you look out over those 100 House members that really could rise to the occasion, you know, maybe is in the trenches and can be that statesman, stateswoman?
Well, I think they've already presented themselves, and I can't go down the entire line. But once again, I want to say I'm really proud of the Democratic leadership. Dave Wansenried took probably the hardest hit, political hit that I've ever seen, and bounced back and has done an admirable job in bringing about the compromises necessary to make this House work. John Parker from Great Falls has done exactly the same thing. I'm very impressed with him, and Monica Ledeen as well. They've worked extremely well as a team. Larry Gent and Chris Harris have pitched in and been a valuable couple members of the team as well.
What about on the Republican side?
Well, you know, I don't know the Republican leadership all that well. I just don't. I've had an opportunity in the Rules Committee and in the off-the-floor meeting with the new Speaker the other day. And on those occasions, there was a lot of politics going on. We'll just have to see when the politics of the organization are over and the hard job of administering the House and governing come into play, whether or not they'll rise to the occasion. I'm confident the Democratic leadership will. If I knew the Republican leadership a little bit better than I do, I might be able to give you an assessment. But right now, I'm just going to say the jury's out. I hope they come up to the stature of the Democratic leadership, and if they do, we're going to have a successful session.
Well, we'll be watching. John, want to thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
And when we come back, we're going to open up our phone lines for your comments. If you'd like to participate, in Billings, 657-2941 or 1-800-441-2941. And we'll be right back.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome back. You're listening to What's Happening in Helena. I'm Jackie Yamanaka in Helena. Jim Gransbury is in Billings. Once again, our phone number is 657-2941, 800-441-2941.
Jackie, maybe you should tell the folks about the school funding committees that are at work every day of the week and even into the night as we speak.
Yes, as we speak, the Senate Education Committee, I'm just going to abbreviate the committee's name, is meeting right now. And they are meeting in the evening in part to accommodate people who have to work during the day but yet are very interested in the issue of how do we define a free quality system of public schools. And so they'll be meeting probably for the next 2 weeks is what the chairman indicated yesterday afternoon. And then they're trying to arrange a MetNet system next week so they can accommodate folks who can't travel to Helena. The chairman told me, Don Ryan told me, that their testimony is also very valid, and they want that entered into the record as they try to make that definition.
And now over in the House, they have a select committee that was appointed.
Yes, and that was just named this week. It's chaired by Huntley Democrat Monica Ledeen. Frankly, the House committees are just getting organized. And
they were just announced yesterday.
They were just announced yesterday, so they're a little bit behind in that sense. And so we don't know yet when exactly they're going to be meeting.
Well, we should, those folks who are listening to our program, we might remind you that this is a biennial effort on the part of Yellowstone Public Radio to keep Montanans apprised of what's going on each week there in Helena. And for the next 4 months on Thursday night, Jackie and I will be here with guests trying to do clarify, I guess, what's going on in Helena that particular week and what the specific issues are. And we can go right now to a caller from Billings. Go ahead.
Well, interesting program. And it'll be interesting to see how the parties change in the next few years, both nationally and locally. But what I wanted to comment on, and I'm wondering if anyone has said anything to either of you along these lines, the tsunami and the tremendous destruction that's taken place in Asia seems to me to be something that even nationally we're just... It's so overwhelming no one wants to talk about it, but the economic ripples from that, having destroyed a business base, working class people, entrepreneurs, not just a matter of islands being disturbed that were vacation resorts, it seems to me there are so many things that should affect that. I'm wondering if the legislature understands that they need to be prepared for what may happen 18 months from now. China certainly is lucking out in a terrible sense, but at the same time, you can't fault them for taking advantage with every hit that the Asian Rim nations take. We find the PLA and the People's Republic getting a little more leg up. And I'm wondering if either of you have a comment on local affairs, since we are tied to so much in markets overseas. Not the idea of the human suffering and that I don't discount, but I'm looking 30 months down the road, because we're not going to rebuild this. We've lost generationally people who know how to fish, who know how to farm, places to do that. And I just wonder if either of you care to comment on that. It's going to affect Montana, I think, and perhaps you disagree. And I'll hang up and listen.
Jackie?
Well, I have not heard anything here, frankly, at the Capitol talking about any ripple effects. The only comment that I have heard was away from the Capitol and its impact, quite frankly, on the high-tech industry, because so many of the components for computers and other high-tech equipment is produced in many of these areas. There are also a great number of programmers. But frankly, I have not heard those discussions yet at the Capitol.
The only thing that I've seen was some preliminary observations that were published in the Wall Street Journal that this will not have much of an effect on international economics or trade. The destruction here is of such a, what shall we say, local impact, which the countries involved, depending on their preparation or lack of resources, rebuilding those lives will take a tremendous amount of capital. But in terms of interrupting the international finance and trading community, it doesn't seem to appear that that's going to be very much effect. We have a caller from Livingston. Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment on the election of the new speaker.
Yes.
And I just hope that the man wants to get something done. I know maybe it's backdoor deal, but I just want them to do something up there. And my only comment is this. I don't have personal transportation, but they don't do anything. I'll make sure I'll go up. I'll be up there. I'll even have to catch the bus. I'll be up there, and I'll be walking to every office up there in the Capitol trying to make them do something.
What is it you're looking for in terms of economic development?
Economic development, fixing the school, school financing problem.
Mm-hmm.
And putting some of this surplus away in a rainy day fund, so just in case anything happens, we'll have the money there. And to put certain amounts, a certain amount of money, revenue away in this fund, and nobody touches it. No one can can't be spent unless it's absolutely necessary. But I don't want to put that in there because they'll figure out a way to spend it. So just not to have them touch it. So just in case anything happens later on down the road, we'll have the money there.
Well, sir, it's heartening to know that you're listening and watching what is happening up here at the Capitol. Sometimes I wonder if we're operating in a vacuum.
Well, I couldn't. Well, I immigrated here from Indiana, and I couldn't. I wanted to do this back there, but nobody wanted to do anything. They just came up with the same cliches. Well, what can I do? What can you do about it? Just one person. You can't fight city hall, yada, yada, yada.
I would say your opportunities to participate are greater here than they were back there, because although that we're a large state, we have a very small population, and this really is a citizen's legislature. And so your opportunity to have an effect directly with those who are members of the legislature are readily available.
And I will mention, as someone who covers hearings and so forth, when we just call them real Montanans come up, and no disrespect to the lobbyists and department staff that come and testify on bills, but when ordinary Montanans figure out a way to get to Helena and testify on a bill, we sit up and take notice, because they're rare.
Okay, just wanted to put in my two cents.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Well, we have a couple. We have about 1 minute left, Jackie. So, if you'd like to let the folks know, maybe some of the things that are coming up early next week, and
well, we're going to continue on, of course, with school funding. So, those hearings will be up. We're now just starting to see the schedule for the House. There'll be several tax issues coming up. I think some things to watch will be in the judiciary committees, and also anything to do with the Montana Supreme Court. There are a number of bills. They haven't yet been scheduled for committee, but to make changes to the Supreme Court, such as term limits, such as the requirements perhaps having districts where justices are elected from. So I think some of those things, I mean, while I'm just going to say this at a blanket, you know, while some people may be focusing in on just school funding, there are a number of other bills that are in the process, in the hopper, and we'll see if they actually see the light of day and make it to a hearing in committee.
I'm sure there's many of those bills that'll do just exactly that.
And I'll be watching them.
You've been listening to What's Happening in Helena, a weekly presentation of Yellowstone Public Radio. I'm Jim Gransberry, and good night for myself and Jackie Amanaka. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.